You're listening to The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
All right, 902 on ESPN 97.5. We haven't even mentioned Djokovic yet. I know it's tennis, but that no one cares. But he is now, it's like just a few years ago, wasn't Federer the greatest ever? And it was not even like, it wasn't even arguable that Federer is the greatest tennis player. I mean, Ken Hoffman always, Roger Federer is so much better than Tiger, whatever. Everybody's got 20 majors now. Djokovic just hit his 20th major. Nadal's got 20. Federer has 20. So it's like, what? Everybody gets 20 majors. It's no big deal. It's like, this is apparently, is this not one of the great times for tennis ever? With Serena, the greatest women's player ever.
Yeah, but I feel like a lot of people checked out on tennis.
Yeah, no.
I might be wrong, but.
Everybody's
Serena's at the, but yeah, but Serena's at the back end of her career. She's
No. I'm talking right about, now. But we've seen with these three, with Serena, we've seen the greatest tennis ever. This in this lifetime. I mean, you can. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, Serena, but I'm looking at right now because I was noticing during Wimbledon, you can't find a U.S. player.
No.
On the men's side. No. You're not going to find that. And the women's side is starting to get a little tougher, too.
Yeah.
So,
But we watch the greatest ever in Serena. That's not even arguable.
No. We watch the greatest ever in Serena. Yeah. But right now, though, it's probably really great for tennis right now, too. It's just, it's kind of like women's golf when there are no U.S. players involved in a sport, it's harder for U.S. fans to get involved. That we grew up in a time where men's tennis was with McEnroe and Connors. You had Borg, who was Swedish, but McEnroe and Connors, the battles they would have, and Yvonne Lindell is not a U.S. player. But because U.S. players were involved at that time, and then Boris Becker, the German, came into the mix. I guess even back then, if you really think about it, like Roscoe Tanner had a big serve, but he wasn't a great player. It's really... When you start talking about men's U.S. players, it's Connors. Who am I missing? Connors and McEnroe. And no, but I mean, isn't there a third? Because it's been a long run for Federer, long run for Rafa, who is more of a clay court specialist, but has shown he can win on any surface. Who are the U.S. players other than this has been a long, long absence of star players.
Yeah.
On the U.S.
Yeah,
side.
It's
Andre. Okay, Andre Agassi. Pete Sampras. That's who I forgot about. Right. 90s, Pete Sampras was very dominant.
Well, Pete Sampras was thought to, when he retired, he was the greatest ever. And then Federer took the title from him. And now Djokovic has a claim to being the greatest ever. It's just, this is a great, this is, we're watching, some of the greatest players ever.
I guess Andy... Andy Roddick wasn't bad.
Oh, he had two. No, Andy Roddick wasn't one of the greatest players. He had a nice little run, but he wasn't one of the greats. No, Pete Sampras is obvious. So us talking about tennis is stupid. What I'm saying is
Let's
this.
Get back to tennis.
Is this
talk.
What I'm saying is this? Is that we're this? If you do enjoy tennis. It probably can't be any better between Nadal, Federer. Now Federer is on the back end; he's about done. He lost early.
So is Rafa,
and Rafa too.
Rafa too.
But Djokovic is just he's unbeatable,
plowing through people,
unbeatable right now.
I'd probably argue that about eight years ago, 10 years ago, it was better when you were Serena in her prime. Venus is still a factor to some extent. Rafa and Nadal were
and
younger.
Federer.
I mean, Rafa and Federer were younger. Yeah. It was probably a little better. I used to never miss. Now, this is what happens. When you have a multitude of things to choose from, tennis gets hurt. Because I remember during the summer, me and my brother were, we wouldn't miss. That's what you watched. It wasn't a lot of sports on in the middle of the afternoon.
But you were kids. You watched everything.
You would always watch. You would always watch that. And then we'd go play. But it was also, when you had U.S. players, it's much more meaningful, too. When you have somebody who represents you. It's much more, when you have representation, it's much more meaningful. You don't have U.S. representation anymore, and you haven't had it, I guess, really full-time since Pete Sampras was gone.
Yeah. So we teased the Texans. Man, Barkevious Mingo. And it's unbelievable.
The Texans are like, what do you mean tease the Texans? That guy's not with us.
So I'm looking at, I forget which website it was on, and it says, former Texan charged with, and I was like, what the hell? And it's Barkevious Mingo in a Texans helmet. They're like, wait a minute, he's a Falcon. Why are we getting this put on us? Barkevious Mingo was arrested in Texas this week on a charge of indecency with a child and sexual contact. So, no, that is about all of the information that we have. We do know that the Falcons have cut him, have released him. He probably never works again in the he definitely never works again in the NFL. He wasn't very good to begin. He wasn't very good when he was here. He hasn't been very good over his last few years.
He's a special teams player and a backup. That's what he is. That's why he's sticking around. He had 2.5 sacks last year. He's a backup and a special teams player.
Well, yeah, that's why he was sticking around. He ain't sticking around anymore.
No, but he stayed around longer than I expected him to.
Yeah.
After kind of washing out as the first rounder.
Yeah, no. Well, yeah, I mean, he had a name, first of all, because at first it was funny. SEC guy made fun of his name one time, I remember, and because of LSU's recruiting class, and he was making fun of his name versus some of the Alabama players' names. He was making fun of Barkevious Mingo. So that's what I remember most about Barkevious Mingo.
Here it is. NFL linebacker Barkevious Mingo allegedly pulled at the underwear of a teenage boy before attempting intercourse in a Texas hotel room in 2019. According to a search warrant that led Mingo to being arrested last week on a charge of indecency with child sexual contact. According to a warrant issued by the Arlington Police Department, which was reported Saturday by Sports Illustrated, Mingo invited a teenage family member and the boy's friend to visit an amusement park and go-kart complex during 4th of July. Mingo was said to have also taken the two boys to a steakhouse and bought them clothes from Nike before returning to a hotel where the 30-year-old was staying. Later that night, the victim was woken up by Mingo pulling at his underwear. Mingo allegedly became aggressive and pulled the victim's underwear down to his shins. The victim advised that when this was occurring, he was scared and pretended to be asleep. Mingo allegedly then tried to have intercourse with the unidentified victim. So that's currently going on. He's facing a felony charge punishable by up to 20 years in prison. The lawyer, Lucas Garcia, called the allegations completely baseless to the NFL Network. He said he's the victim of a false claim, and we believe is motivated by money or some other ulterior motive. We are confident that the truth will come to light. My client will be fully exonerated. So let's see how this plays out.
Yeah.
Certainly. That's a serious accusation.
Yeah.
A sexual assault. Let's see what happens in this.
So that's an ugly story. And yeah, hopefully we don't hear any more about that ever again. And that's just unfortunate. As when he was a Texan, no wonder why they had the Texan hat on it and helmet on him. And that's the most details that I've seen of it so far. I haven't seen that story. So that's come to light. That's unfortunate for Barkevious Mingo. But we can take his Texan helmet off when we're talking about him and stop saying former Texan, because he's a Falcon, as far as I'm concerned. He's a lifelong Falcon, as far as I'm concerned. So they get they can have
stick
that
on him, even on 19. If I'm wasn't that the year that Billy traded for him? After that happened? Yeah. Because that was when they sent off. 19 was when they sent it, when they brought Tunsil in, yeah? No, the 19 season, yeah. And you sent off, which at the same time was when you were sending off, he was part of the package that when they traded, it was Jacob Martin and Barkevious Mingo came over for Jadeveon Clowney. Texans actually traded for him right about that time.
Yeah, we'll see. He played with the Texans in 19. Mm-hmm. So that was when, well, he was part of the team then. On July 4th, he would have been part of the team already.
He was part of the Texans already.
Yeah. Yeah, it was while he was a Texans organization. He started one game for the Texans. He, all season long, he played in 16.
Well, he was a special, he's like, yeah. I said, he's a full-time core special teamer.
No others. He had six combined tackles, five solo, one assisted tackle, and he had two QB hits on the season. So, Barkevius Mingo.
I'll look at snap count. So, special teams over the last, for Houston, he played in 74% of the special team snaps. Last year for Chicago, he played in 82% of the special team snap. He's a full-time core special teamer is what he is, or maybe was. We'll see. So, yeah, that's news on a one-year Texan and a former first-round pick of the Cleveland Browns and, of course, former LSU Tigers.
Yeah, I don't put that on the Tigers.
Kiki Mingo.
Don't put that on there. So
I went to school. That's all I'm saying.
So let me ask you this question. This question was asked by Bleacher Report. The worst veteran contract for the Houston Texans.
We'll figure it out after a break. I've got my idea, but I'm going to take my shot. When we come back in 2.5 minutes, I'm going to have my guess.
Yeah, I'll have mine too. But you are going to talk right now about it, getting some insurance.
Well, TJS Insurance makes sure that you, well, what they want you to do is actually try to find a lower rate. I know a lot of you suffer from this, and then talking to the guys over at TJS Insurance, a big problem has been that so many people just say, well, I get these bundle rates and I get this discount and that discount. And so it's just too much of a hassle to switch over and I probably have the best rate. Now, it's actually not the case. If you stay with the same company and you don't shop your rates, you are not going to have the best rate from one single company. They're going to continue to raise your rates. And this is in the business. This is the way it is. That's why you have to kind of hit reset every once in a while on your homeowner's insurance. But TGS makes it easy. You text the word money to 232323, and they do the shopping for you. They shop a variety of A-rated insurance companies, and they get you the response within seconds. They'll tell you what the lowest rate they found is, and they'll give you a variety of insurance companies for you to choose from where you can actually have A-rated insurance for a competitive rate. You deserve that. You deserve to have a lower rate and more of your money back in your pocket. Why overpay for all these years with the same company who's not even looking out for their lowest rate for you? They give somebody else a lower rate, but they treat their existing customers badly. That should not be the case for you. Text the word money to 232323. That's tgsinsurance.com.
Years of research and innovation.
Innovation Map is the new voice of innovation in Houston.
Pretty cool, huh, Morty?
Covering startups, tech, energy, health, social impact, and more. Visit innovationmap.com today.
Do it now! Do it! Do it! Do it now!
Hi, this is Meg.
This is The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
All right. Welcome back here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, 713-780-3776. If you want to get in here, you got a thought on who's got the worst contract in on the Texans? You are more than welcome. Lance has a thought. Who has the worst Texans contract? It's a pretty tough fight.
What do you mean it's a pretty tough fight?
There's plenty of them. So
yeah, that's
this
what
is
I mean.
This is a battle.
You mean it's a battle? I'm going to say the worst contract is Whitney Mercilus.
Whitney Mercilus is
Although
going
they
to come.
They redid his contract.
They redid it. So that but he's not still $15 million in dead cap.
Doesn't seem good.
Yeah.
Uncuttable.
But now next year,
he's
you're
uncuttable.
Unfettered.
No, he made it just like Brian Cushing made it about 3 years longer than I thought he should have. Whitney will make it 3 years longer than he should have. I mean, yeah. He's dead after this year.
You can always look at Tunsil, and this is a.
Yeah, but it's not going to be Tunsil.
Yeah, it's not going to be Tunsil because he's actually a decent player, but he's certainly not worth $22 million a year.
Vernon Hargraves?
That's not
just
that's,
for even being on
not,
the team.
You know who's on this list is Eric Murray.
Ooh, maybe should be one.
3 years, $18 million, including $10.75 million guaranteed.
It can't be Deshaun.
No, nope.
It could.
Well, how much are you going to get out of that $27 million?
No,
you
you're
going
to give him free money.
Yeah,
you're going to give him free money.
That's
it's the worst guy.
It's the worst one.
You gave him $27 million of free money for him to spend.
Yeah,
and travel around the world and gallivant, and it, you will never
get
that back.
You paid for his internet looking for Instagram. You did that. It didn't cost $2,700.
Paid for his internet, but yeah.
Well, you paid for him to send.
Maybe he went and did stuff.
Plane tickets to women in Atlanta and stuff.
Did you pay for their plane tickets? Technically,
technically you did. Well, technically Enron bought the Texans. Technically, but what about Randall Cobb?
Oh yeah,
he's set to carry a cap hit of $10.5 million, $12.3 million in dead money remaining on his deal.
Forgot about Randall Cobb.
Houston can move on next season and save just over $8 million against the cap. They'll save $8 million next year when they cut him.
Okay, now let's play the game of who actually is the worst contract. Watson's won.
Watson is won because of the situation, yes.
Yeah.
There's no. I don't think there's any question. He's the worst.
And the amount of money you already gave him for signing bonus. Watson would be one. I think two would be Randall Cobb. Three would be Murray. Four might be Tunsil because you didn't get an extra year put on it.
And Merciless, you're out after this year, but it's still terrible.
It's still, you can't cut him this year. He's made it impossible to cut him this year.
These are all Bill O'Brien contracts. All Bill O'Brien. Ridiculous.
Billy and Jackie.
Ridiculously stupid contracts by
now, to be fair.
The worst GM in NFL
Chris
history.
Chris Olsen was here for that. Whitney Merciless. Chris Olsen did the Whitney Merciless contract.
He did the Whitney, but I'm not putting that on him.
Why not?
Because the GM will tell you how much. The GM will tell you how much. Maybe. Chris Olsen didn't decide how much he was going to get paid.
Well, Chris Olsen did a contract where, look, let's just be real about this. Chris did one where that thing was not exactly front-loaded. It was hitting you for a long time. He made him uncuttable for 3 years.
Well, but you'd probably...
That's not a great contract.
No, but you probably did that because you had no idea that you would have kind of.
Yeah, but Chris Olsen knows how contracts are structured.
When you wanted to be front loaded, when you had cap money at the time, yeah.
Yeah, I would have wanted. That's what I'm saying, and Chris didn't do that.
Well, it was front loaded.
No, it's 3 full years that you're paying. This is lasting a while. This contract has made him uncuttable.
Well,
it's not
dumbass giving him $54 million. Wait a minute, dumbass giving him $54 million. I'm not blaming Chris Olsen for that.
I'm not blaming. It's hard for me to just say Chris Olsen gets nothing when he's a contract negotiator.
Well,
I'm not putting anything on Tunsil, and obviously, but his job as contract negotiator is to get the best contract, and he did. You think Bill O'Brien would have gladly? Let's just be fair about this. Bill O'Brien would have gladly had a better, more team favorable deal so you can get better contracts with other players. You always want to get the best team favorable deal. That was not a team favorable deal. Now, it's Bill O'Brien's idea. You know, Chris Olsen doesn't say, this is the guy we're going to re-sign. That's not his decision. That's Bill O'Brien. But it is his job to negotiate the contracts out. And I don't think that was one of Chris's better deals when you consider how long the pain lasts for where it made him uncuttable for several years. That's not great. I would think you could have argued against Whitney Merciless,
but how
especially
are you,
on the heels of a bad
how
season.
Are you ever going to cut a guy that you gave 54? There was nowhere in any contract when you're doing a deal for $54 million over 4 years, where in the world are
why
you going to have
getting,
a place where you can cut him?
Why is he getting 50?
That's on Bill O'Brien.
After 2 years, he didn't negotiate the deal. Why are you saying Bill O'Brien told the contract negotiator how to do the contract? That's not accurate. There's no way that's possible.
Well, so Coach, you're telling me that Chris Olsen decided to pay him $54 million.
I'm telling you there's
million.
A chance Chris Olsen did a bad deal. It's possible, John.
I guess it's possible. But you're telling me that Chris Olsen decided to give Whitney Merciless $54 million. No, I'm saying no
Why
way.
Why would you think Bill O'Brien told him
Laramie
the number
because
he made
22?
It easy? He wanted it to match his jersey or something.
Did
or,
you,
well,
wait a minute? Who decided $22 million?
No, Bill negotiated that one. Chris Olsen didn't negotiate that.
How do you know who negotiated the Bill the Whitney Merciless?
You think 3 years ago that Bill and coming off of or 2 years ago and coming off of the coming off of a bad year? I mean that $54 million is that's just. That was a bad. First of all, he should have never been given a contract.
Well, right.
Period. Number two, no, I believe that the contract negotiator. I'll check the timeline to see if Chris Olsen was out. If he is, I'll apologize to Chris. There's a chance he just did a bad contract too.
And there's a chance that Bill O'Brien told him give the guy $54 million.
I mean, there's a chance, but
no, he's the
like
GM.
You're acting like Bill O'Brien told Chris. So the good contracts were Chris and the bad ones
I
were
didn't
built?
Say Chris. I don't think Chris had anything to do with any of them. He told him, here, pay him this. That's it. Now go. Now get it done. Yeah.
I don't know. Neither one of us know.
No. Yeah.
I'm just telling you, it was a bad contract to start with because you couldn't dump it after just a year or 2 years. It was a bad deal. It wasn't dumpable. None of these contracts have been dumpable.
None of them are dumpable because they were overpaid. You can't get rid of a guy that you give
a
bad player $54 million
to. It's structure. You can get $54 million if you're signing, but if you structure it appropriately, you can get rid of them.
So here's
they're not guaranteed.
The timeline is Whitney got his deal late December 2019. Chris Olsen was out less than a month later. So I'm not sure what played into that. But Chris Olsen was out less than a month after.
Well, Chris is out because I think Chris is out because from what I heard inside that building from somebody who's not there anymore, I think Chris was out because he had questions about how OB was. There was no checks and balances in the building.
Yes.
There was no check. And if you dared to have a check, and as a lot of people found out, if you have a dissenting opinion, which can be healthy, you were basically, you paid the iron price. I mean, Chris, I don't think it's unfair to say Chris Olsen. For his part, I don't think Chris Olsen liked how certain things were done, you know, during that regime with the Tunsil deal. Before a trade, I'm talking about the trade, not the deal. And so it's possible Bill O'Brien made him give Whitney as much money as humanly possible and told him, do a really bad contract so he stays here and we can't possibly cut him. And structure it completely in the players. It's possible, but it's also possible that Bill O'Brien did that deal and Chris Olsen did nothing, which at that point I'm wondering, you know, why. But if he left a month earlier, then maybe...
Month later.
Month I mean, later.
A month later, About I should say. Later. If he left a month later, maybe that has something to do with it. I don't know.
Or he was already castrated there. He was... He was persona non grata in that building for a little while.
If he wasn't involved in the deal at all, obviously he has no culpability. If he did that deal, if he was responsible, Chris Olsen, Bill O'Brien's not going to tell him line by line items how to write a contract. That's Chris Olsen's job. He knows how to do it, and it doesn't benefit Bill O'Brien to give a terrible contract. If he can get a better contract, it gives him more money to get other deals done. But... So if Chris Olsen was a contract writer, that's on him for making a deal that they couldn't get out of earlier. But to your point, there's a chance that he wasn't even involved with that contract. If he was gone a month later, there's a chance that Bill O'Brien said, give me that. I'll take that. I'll do this contract thing. We don't even need you. So there's always that chance that Bill O'Brien just, even for a guy who was being paid at the time, maybe he was dead man walking at that time anyway. That's always possible.
Yeah. Well... I don't know how you're going to give a four-year deal, $54 million deal to a guy who isn't worth, I don't know, $6 million total, $5 million total, a guy who is just a role player. At any point in that contract, it's a good contract. It was a terrible contract from the get-go because it was way too much money for a crappy player. And he has been literally a crappy player for the Houston Texans. So
for
the last 4 years,
he was coming off a season where he had four. He was not the 7.5 year 2019 where he got his contract. He was okay. I mean, he was okay. He had 9 tackles for loss. He was okay. 7.5 sacks, 9 tackles for loss, quarterback hits. His AV was 7. I mean, obviously his best year was 16, the magical 2016 which the Texans' entire team was built on what people did in 2016, but in 15. In 15, he had 12 sacks. The next year, he had 7.5 sacks, but he had 22 quarterback hits and 13 tackles for loss. But realistically, starting with that injury in 17, Whitney Mercilus, for as you mentioned, 4 years, really hasn't. Replacement players could have done so much more for so much less money. I would argue that Jacob Martin is a much more dangerous pass rusher all last year. How old do you think Whitney Mercilus is?
So, hold on. Game log. So, we're talking about he got it in 2019, though?
Late 2019, he got the deal.
Oh, so it was after the season
after
was
the
over.
19, so it was after the 19 season.
So, it's after 7.5 sacks.
December 28th, that's when it was reported.
It was after 7.5 sacks, because that's what he had in 19, but we know a lot of them came early.
Yeah, he had 7.5 sacks, and he had a run of 9 games where he had half a sack that year. Nine games total. With a half a sack.
Yeah, and they looked at the last number, which is 7.5, and said, oh,
and said, oh yeah, let's give him $54 million.
But all of us knew, I mean, Whitney should have been cut. You cut too early instead of too late, and that wasn't even too early. That was right on time.
Yeah.
Goodbye, bring in a less expensive player, and you move forward from there. That's how that works.
He had two sacks in the opener that year. He went on a run of 9 straight games with a half a sack. Then he had 1-1-2-1, and they gave him $54 million.
They signed the guy on a hot streak.
Holy crap, what a dumb... I can't... That this organization is still in the NFL, that hasn't been relegated.
You think they need to be where?
They were run by Dunskys. They're still run by Dunskys.
If there was a league they could go to, sure, but you got to send them to Canada if you want to relegate them.
What about Mexico?
Again,
they got those laser pointers they shoot at people.
What does that have to do with relegation?
What about the XFL? Send them down to the XFL.
They have to exist first.
Well, they do in 23.
It's a defunct league.
2023.
Yeah. Sorry, you can't.
What about CFL?
That's what I'm saying. You have to send them to Canada if you want to relegate them.
Yeah. Well, it's worth the talk. What about Spring League?
You want to relegate them and bring up the Calgary Stampeders?
I want to bring up Alabama.
What? Nick Saban don't want none of that
I want
stuff.
To bring Alabama up and relegate.
The Eskimo Elk.
Relegate Houston
the
to the SEC.
Elks now.
Oh, the Edmonton Elks.
Yes. What if Houston got beat by Auburn?
Auburn?
Yeah.
What
if Auburn beat the Houston Texans in an SEC
Getting
West matchup?
Beat by Bo Nix is what you think could happen?
What if Bo Nix beat the Houston Texans?
Bo Nix?
Ill. That's terrible.
Okay, who's better?
He threw for 170 yards and ran for 68.
That'd be awful. Bo Nix or who?
Bo Nix.
Don't say it.
What?
Is he a pro Texan? A pro Texans player?
I can't believe the Texans were beaten by Tennessee.
No.
By the Vols.
This year's Tennessee? It better not. They'd be clearly terrible if they lose to this Tennessee team that's about to show up.
I don't want to be disrespectful and say, like, Vandy. That wouldn't happen. Or Ole Miss or Mississippi
State. It's disrespectful suggesting they lose to a Tennessee team.
Yeah.
Who all their best players went to Oklahoma.
What about Florida? What about losing to Kyle Trask?
It's 90.
What if they've been relegated last year? Of course, they were coming off a division title. You don't get relegated after winning a division.
And winning a playoff game.
Now you can get relegated.
The Texans shouldn't lose to any SEC team.
Here's how you can do relegation in the NFL. I just figured it out. You just create a division. That's it. The AFC South. Okay, sorry, Colts. You got to go somewhere else. We're bringing in the because we got Jacksonville and Houston already. The Jets are coming in. Sorry, Colts. You are now part of the AFC
East. Here come the Broncos.
It kind of makes sense. You're in the AFC East, right?
So, and the winner of the division gets
and
up.
In Detroit. And
promoted.
Then the Tennessee Titans have to play in the Central. And then the Detroit comes in. So it's, yeah. And so Detroit, actually, this could work. Detroit, Houston, the Jets, and Jacksonville. And
can't
whoever,
play for a title.
They have to play. They can't play for a title. They can't play for playoffs.
They're playing is to get into a division.
Into a better division.
You just play into a real division where you can make playoff money and all that stuff. Yeah, absolutely. Why not? And two teams get relegated. I mean, get advanced. The two teams who are the top two. Get moved into, or maybe you just do one. Maybe you just do one. Whoever wins
that
division.
What a bloody division.
And then come on in, Dallas Cowboys. Come on in, NFC East.
The NFC East come last year.
No, they're all mediocre. All of them were 5, 6, 7 win teams. That's what they did.
No, but you need to.
That would be.
We'd have to. Maybe you have a play-in game where if Jacksonville finishes with 6, let's say Detroit finishes with 7 wins and they're promoted. And Jacksonville has 6. Then Jacksonville faces off against the Giants. And the loser gets relegated into the bottom. Maybe that happens.
It's terrible for our Texans.
This is the worst. In 9:32,
I'm just trying to figure out a way that we can get relegation in the NFL.
We can get the Texans relegated so that they can't hurt anybody's eyes anymore. Man, it's good Texans talk today. 713-780-377. Let's talk about
what's up next. The worst contract in history for the Texans and the biggest draft flops of just this year.
Is Bo Nix better than Davis Mills? I think that's our question on the other side.
Ooh, I don't want to play that game. How about we get back to Astros?
Astros talk on the other side right here on ESPN 97.5.
But first,
Lance or John.
Yeah.
Lance should talk about his ride.
Yeah. I'm ready to talk about my ride.
Craig Desurf.
Craig Desurf is, he was probably for Belgium, I would imagine, or Denmark, or one of those teams when the Euros were started. But Craig Desurf is the guy who runs Gulf Coast Chevy Buick GMC, and we made it very easy to go look at their selection. Just go to LanceZCars.com. But they have a great selection of pre-owned vehicles. The month of July, you have 0% financing for 72 months on very popular models on the Chevy side. And that includes the Chevy Traverse, which is the crossover vehicle that I drive. It is amazing. I would say crossover. It's like a lowered SUV is really all it is at a little better price point, which is something that I was interested in. But there's so much more to what Gulf Coast Chevy Buick GMC is doing. And on the Chevy side, they have great vehicles like the Chevy Silverado, the pickup truck, which has been one of the most acclaimed pickup trucks out there on the market. And they're waiting for you. A tricked out Chevy Silverado can be yours right now. They want your trade-in deals. They want your pre-owned vehicles. So they are going to give you top dollar for your vehicles, and that's going to really lower the price point for you when it comes to purchasing your new car or leasing your new car. They also obviously do leases. That's what I've got right now. I'm working on a lease, and that's the way that I like to do things. So whether you're a purchase person or a lease person, I can tell you the trade-in value is going to be great, and the selection is going to be fantastic. The customer service is above anything that you've experienced. Gulf Coast Chevy Buick GMC. Chevy, find new roads.
This is Carlos Correa, All-Star and World Series champion, and big fan of Gulf Coast Chevrolet and Angleton. No one will treat you better. Chevy, find new roads.
.36 on ESPN 97.5, 7-3, 7-8-0, 3-7-7-6. Did you see Gary? By the way, we haven't even talked about Gary Sanchez's act yesterday when he hit the 3-run homer to put him up 7-2.
Yeah.
Did you see what he did?
No, I didn't.
Oh, watch.
Oh, in the dugout?
And wait, he goes around the bases and he.
Oh, he did it too.
So the day before when Aaron Judge hit the homer.
Oh, and he's covering himself.
Well, here's why. Because Aaron Judge in the post-game press conference said. They said, well, why did you tuck in your jersey? He said, oh, because, you know, it's air conditioned in here and it's cold. So I was cold. I was showing everybody that I was cold. That's why I did that. So now Gary Sanchez running around the bases, tugging at it. And then they gave him a jacket in the dugout to cover himself up because it's so cold. Mm. It has nothing to do with Altuve's jersey being ripped off or anything like that.
And then they got 6 runs stuck up their ass.
Yeah.
Led by Jose Altuve, sticking it so far up there that they have to go into the... No, I'm tired of him. I'm tired of him.
No, wait, you can't say... I mean, this is...
Sick of those guys.
Well...
you know what? Do me a favor. Just make the playoffs. Just make the playoffs if you can. Please.
Well, it would be nice if they made the playoffs, but I doubt they're going to. They're the Yankees, and they really are... Such an underachieving.
We won the series. Congratulations.
They beat the Astros 4 out of 6, by the way.
Good luck with the draft. Yeah, like I said, good luck with the draft.
Yeah.
Hopefully those guys you drafted yesterday will pan out for you.
Well, the Astros didn't get to do any of that, but yeah. Well, you know, because, you know. But yeah, this whole cold thing. How did that taste when Jose Altuve, it was so cold in there, they ripped off his shirt and he was running around with no shirt on. That's how cold it was in there, Yankees.
Are we missing anybody? Are we missing anybody that would have in the past maybe done like the little suck it move, like the Degeneration X or whatever, the X-Pac, or I think I got all my wrestling stuff right, where you do the double chop to your groin or even just grab their sack. Literally towards the dugout. I don't think Reddick would have done that. Gattis might have. Who would be the most aggressive? Because Altuve doesn't. I don't think he's contentious by nature. Now, I'm sorry, Lance McCullers. Bregman or Lance McCullers, but it feels like Breggy lost some of that a little bit after he got chewed out by his dad, when AJ was our dad, before we had a pawpaw. when he carried the bat with him or whatever.
Yeah, no, he got
that
he
was
got,
that was AJ, right?
That was AJ the year before in the World Series.
Yeah, that's right, because Soto did it.
Yeah.
So it feels like he lost a little of his swagger then, and then he didn't feel like he had it back last year. I mean, he had his moments. Well, he's had his moments this year and last year, but he doesn't feel like
you
the
want
same
somebody. Bregman. I think Stanek would do that. Stanek would come out and go, here's
well, I honestly think McCullers and Carlos have that same energy, but Carlos knows to, like, Carlos can dial it back a little bit, I think. I think Lance McCullers is full on, wants every bit of smoke that you can give.
Carlos has said, he's told Bellinger.
Yeah, well, actually, he said that out loud.
Yeah.
Lance McCullers, I get the feeling, would be the guy that would literally grab his cup.
I could see Stanek, too, because he looks like a guy that likes to grab his junk and chaw and stuff. That's what he looks like to me. But listen, that was, and we can't underplay. I know it's Altuve's getting all the love, but Yuli started it with the infield single, and then Tucker, who's up to 276 now, I want to say. Tucker, who's hitting a ton, and then McCormick and Toro coming through with doubles as well. Back-to-back-to-back doubles. Then Castro steps up and he singles. That was kind of it wasn't drilled like the other guys. But everybody coming through, it doesn't happen unless those guys, and this was the bottom. It wasn't Jordan. Obviously it wasn't Carlos because he's not there. It wasn't Uncle Mike. It was the bottom of the order that was coming through. Now the bottom of the order starts with Gurriela and Tucker. But these are the guys that are the unsung heroes. When McCormick is coming through like that, and by the way, dude is money. He is money. You want to talk about a guy who gets irregular at bats, and yet his OPS, of all the non-regulars, he has the highest OPS on the team of all the non-regulars. And it's, by far in a way. And I know it's not arguable anymore because Straw is so great, but McCormick is making a case because of how he drives the ball, the runs that he drives in. Straw is probably is a better center fielder, I would imagine, I guess. But McCormick can play out there, obviously, because Dusty keeps putting him out there. He has come through time and again. It can't be understated what the bottom of the order did yesterday. Toro, what he's done since Bregman has gone down.
Now, Robel's had some dreadful ABs in that series. He was swinging at pitches that were so far out of the zone.
No, Robel has not been great. But these guys... And the bottom of the order, Maldonado homered yesterday. I mean, he lined out to short yesterday in the ninth inning. But none of that happens if it wasn't for these guys stepping up and being clutch to start the inning. And you still got to believe, too, by the way. Everybody who left that building, and, you could be in that locker room, that dugout going, yeah, we're down six. I guess we're down five. I guess we could win, whatever. No, you got to believe. And once that snowball started, when McCormick hit that double, and then, Toro, he hits his double, now it's like, holy crap.
You just want a chance to, like you say, you always want a chance to get to a three-run homer. You always want to be a three-run homer away, because that just gives you that chip in a chair mentality, like in poker.
Or the winning run at the plate. Or even when on deck, Todd Kellis goes, so the winning run is on deck now. When the winning run is on deck, you got a shot.
Yeah, well, you're not even talking about tying. When you're talking about the winning run being on deck, and with the Astros lineup, at some point you're going to get some, usually you're going to get some dangerous names. It could be Jordan on deck. It could be Brantley. It could be Altuve. Of course, when Correa's healthy and Bregman's healthy, when you got that whole list of players, there's any number of guys that could ruin you. For that, for that lineup and for the back end of it, as you mentioned, to get that thing going like that, that was a big deal.
Yeah.
For McCormick and Toro to go back-to-back was a really, really big deal.
Without Bregman and Correa in the lineup, now, obviously, you're weaker. But for them to get through, when it was Yuli leading off and then Tucker, and then you got to get through four guys to be able to get to your big names again, that was something special. That was you got to give it up to the McCormicks and the Toros for coming through the way, and Castro coming through with the base knock the way he did as well. So
we come back in a couple minutes. I've got one good guy who we might need to be concerned about, who is an Astro, and one national and international bad guy who was vanquished over the weekend. We'll take a look at the tale of those two cities when we get back right here on ESPN 97.
But in the meantime, are those guys underdogs?
Well, I don't want to give too much away. I'll just say this. An underdog fantasy, I got to go there because I am getting ready to – I may take a little break, obviously. Not a lot of sports going on right now. But the other day, you can go to underdogfantasy.com. And the other day, I had a great run with my playoffs, with my basketball. I just had I did a draft where, by the way, on Underdog Fantasy, this is daily fantasy. This is season-long fantasy. But it's so much more than that. They do rivalry and head-to-head matchups and over-unders on points or total bases or strikeouts. And then if you pick more than one of them, you pick two, three, four, five. It's just like kind of those parlays where they have multipliers, and those multipliers go all the way up to 20 times. So if you pick five picks that are all right, you are going to win 20 times whatever your play is. So if it's a $20 play, that's a $400 winner. One of our listeners joined, and the very first day he won $390. When you join using the promo code RADIO, you're going to get a $25 cash bonus put into your account on your first deposit. And you can use that for anything you want to, including their best ball tournament where you are going to draft an entire fantasy football team for the regular season. And at the end, you got a chance to win part of the $3.5 million in prizes. You don't even have to set your lineup every week. Your draft will speak for itself throughout the year. So make sure if you're a skilled fantasy sports technician, make sure you go to underdogfantasy.com and use promo code RADIO.
If you can't get enough of your favorite ESPN 97.5 show, we've got just the thing for you. And it's not f***ing safe for work.
Won't somebody please think of the children?
For all the uncensored interaction, head over to twitch.tv/ESPN97.5.
Say what?
You're listening to The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
Superstar world champion Jermell Charlo looks to make boxing history in the home state, in his home state of Texas, when he defends his super welterweight world titles against undefeated WBO world champion Brian Cassano. Make sure to get your tickets now to see the action live at attcenter.com or ticketmaster.com. And that attcenter.com thing should be a giveaway. This is going to be in San Antonio. So it'll be call or rate at 9:55, but only if you can make the trip to San Antonio should you call in. We're giving you tickets. You're going to have to find your own way to get there. But once again, Jermell Charlo versus Brian Cassano. Going to be a world championship fight in San Antonio this Saturday. So call rate at 9:55 wins those.
Before we left, I told you there was a good guy story to be concerned about. There's a good guy concern and a bad guy vanquished. Let's start with the good guy concern. The good guy concern would be Zach Greinke. And Zach Greinke was pulled the other day after 64 pitches, I believe. And he wasn't throwing poorly. It's not like he had problems or wasn't pitching well. But Zach Greinke was pulled over concerns of an ailing shoulder. And so now we have a shoulder issue, which is why he was pulled out after 64 pitches. This is a pitcher in his he's on the wrong side of 30. So it's a little bit of a concern when you have a shoulder issue. And this is on the heels of – or you tie that up with Fromber being unable to locate the ball where he wants to, and some real concerns over the last three starts. Maybe a little bit of concern. That's why Zach Greinke, I'm sure that's why Zach Greinke is not listed as one of the three starters. They have it.
Five starters. They have the other four, and they have that opening for Greinke's spot.
Where they just don't know about
Greinke. They just don't know about
Greinke. For the flip side, for the other side of, obviously things can really change this All-Star break. You can set it up in any direction you want.
Right, and they could make him the last starter. And he could actually go on the 10-day DL
retroactive
and actually make his start. Because you've got 4 days off here.
He had an off day yesterday.
That's five. And the fifth day would be either that or just 1 day extra. But I don't know why you would have to do that unless you want to bring up a pitcher. unless you want to bring somebody up. So
are you worried about? I'm a little worried about Greinke in the shoulder.
Well, anytime thing. You hear a shoulder, yeah. I'm be interested to see how Urquidy is coming along with his rehab, and to see whether or not
there is a chance we could see
he could get back in
Christian
there.
Javier back in the rotation.
Ooh.
I know it's not been optimal for Christian Javier.
No, but you know what? Getting back into the rotation, maybe he gets his mojo back. Maybe he doesn't feel like he's got to throw, you know, everything into that one inning, and he couldn't, whatever the case may be. Whatever is bothering Christian Javier, it wasn't bothering him when he was a starter. So maybe, just maybe, he can get back some of his mojo.
Maybe he wants that rhythm of his preparations different. When you're going through, maybe his preparations, maybe he's a starter. Maybe he's not a reliever.
Yeah.
I mean, that could be the case too. Here's what Zach Greinke said after the game the other night. It, meaning his shoulder, it's been bothering me a little over a month, and just hoping to have a shorter start this time with a bit of extra days from the All-Star break and be rested for the second half is the goal. Dusty Baker said Greinke told him this week his shoulder wasn't feeling at its best, and a plan on Saturday was an abbreviated outing. So that was always the plan, though probably longer than four innings. But Baker decided four innings were enough because Greinke wasn't as sharp with his fastballs like usual, and he was throwing a lot of curveballs. We thought that was enough, especially with the All-Star break. He'll get a few extra days. I think he's leading the league in innings pitched. Not that he's pitched so much, but he's thrown a lot of pitches and gone deep into games. It's just something to keep an eye on. One of the good guys, we're a little worried about one of the good guys. We want to make sure that shoulder is not sore. If so, maybe you skip his start in the rotation. If it's not, I would go so far as to say if he doesn't feel like he's back to being 100% with that shoulder, just go ahead and skip his start. And you got enough starters, bring up, let Javier throw, and let's wait until Greinke's where he needs to be. Because at this point, you're like the Spurs. You are playing for a championship. So if you need to be smart and get your guys ready for that postseason run, your veterans, your Tim Duncan, is Zach Greinke, for example, then do it. Mm-hmm. Just be smart with those guys. That's fine.
Especially
That's fine.
As old as he is.
Yeah, exactly. Now, the bad guys vanquished, Greg Hardy. You may know him as a woman beater, as a guy who he's a serial bad guy. I don't think I'm breaking new news or ground there.
Well, yeah, I don't want to be judgmental, but yeah, he sucks.
Yeah, he sucks as a person, as a human. Unfortunately, he's also somebody who has had some success. He got into MMA, and if you thought he was going to get his comeuppance, it's taken a while. Greg Hardy has fought on shows outside of the UFC, worked his way up into a UFC contract, and has had some success knocking people out in the UFC. But he was knocked out on Saturday in an exchange, and this is what happens when you're a heavyweight. You get into a series of blows where it was not like, I mean, Greg Hardy was rushing his opponent. He thought he had landed a punch, and he came running in and got caught by a left hook, and it was Dream Street, and he got knocked out.
Awesome. Now, that one I did see.
And that one was, and people, I think a lot of people are cheering against Greg Hardy.
Oh, yeah.
Want to see him lose, because you know he is. Just Google him and Google his story. He is not a good guy. Do you see the guy? I'm sure you watched it.
Yeah.
You saw him pour the beer into the shoe and chug it from the shoe.
I didn't see that.
Yeah.
But I did. I was watching the fight, and I'm like, oh, God, this is a fat white guy. How's he going to beat Greg Hardy? This sucks. Greg Hardy's
going to
win.
No, he's not a white guy either. He's Polynesian, I believe.
Okay. He looked like a fat white guy to me.
No, not a fat white guy.
So, but aren't Polynesians aren't white guys? They're not.
No,
they're not white guys.
They're not really white
guys. His name was Taya Tuivasa.
Oh,
it's Taya Tuivasa.
Do you consider
Tua Tagovailoa a white guy?
Yeah, he's not fat though,
but he's not.
You consider Tua a white guy?
He's not a white guy either.
Yeah.
If you want,
oh wow!
But if you want to see Charlie,
I always thought Yao was a white guy.
No, but not the case.
That was always a strange one to me. Like when you said, "What do you mean Yao's not a white guy?"
And before we go on, if you want to see a non-white guy fight another non-white guy, call him right now. Charlo versus Castano tickets. Castano tickets. He's Argentinian, not a white guy.
It kind of is.
You can if you want to see that fight, we got tickets for it. Call in right now. Apparently, everybody John looks at is white now.
Well, I mean, I don't know about me. I'm on the fence with me right now. Okay, what do I always tell you, Del?
Did he pour it into a Jordan?
I'm not playing the game today.
Okay. I don't know what you're talking about here. Anyway, so I was like, oh, he's going to beat this guy. That sucks. That really sucks that he's going to, that Greg Hardy. Oh, look at Greg Hardy on the ground. I loved it. That was awesome. I can't root for that guy. I just can't root for that guy.
No, you can't root for Greg Hardy.
No.
I would never root for, I want Greg Hardy to lose every match.
Yeah.
I never want him to win another match in history.
Yeah, I don't want to be judgmental, but he's got a reputation for not doing good.
I mean, throwing nice a woman on a stack of guns, yeah, telling her you're going to kill her, choking her to the point that she almost dies and letting her come back.
Yeah.
And you're going to keep doing that.
And then getting
hired by the Cowboys?
Yeah.
Dallas, come on.
No, that you would say they're better than that, but they're really not. They're really not better than that. 957 ESPN 97.5. No, it was a very happy moment. And then the Conor McGregor fight was like, oh, great. Lasted almost a round.
So actually, Greg Hardy is 7-4. I didn't realize he had been beaten UFC Fight Night, too. This is his second straight loss. Now that he's stepping up in some competition,
Dana White has said he's not sure what his future is with the UFC.
Let him get knocked down one more time.
Why are you giving that guy a chance over and over again?
Well, I did not realize. I guess because there's so many UFC fights. This guy has. He also had a loss. UFC Fight Night to a decision loss against Alexander Volkov, who is a legitimate. I mean, I remember when he beat Juan Adams. Golly, he's fought in the UFC way longer than I realized. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. That's his ninth fight in the UFC. I mean, you want to talk about no one gets more matches off than the UFC.
No.
Mick Maynard, who lives here in Houston, who's the matchmaker, he should be given, his salary should be multiplied times 4 because he has to make matches every other week. He's got new work to do. They have so many matches. This is his third time. He's fought. This is his fourth fight in 12 months, 13 months. Greg Hardy. I mean, boy, they get through some fights now.
Yep. Just 67 seconds in. He's 4-4 in the UFC now, 7-4 in MMA. And Dana White said, don't know his future. I know his future. Beat it. Beat it, jerk. Beat it. Don't want to see Greg Hardy again. That'd be awesome. If we never saw Greg Hardy again, wouldn't that be sweet? So we kind of, you got to go because it's time for you to go.
Yeah.
But, but Dell, we really haven't given you your props today. I mean, it's we've gone 3 hours into the show and we still haven't given you your props on maybe the biggest weekend of your life.
Well, I didn't particularly do anything. I mean, my
Black Widow?
My countrymen did.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say Black Widow.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's what I thought you were.
You know, I actually.
That made a lot of money.
Yeah, it made
a lot of money.
So, before you go, Lance, I think that you need to talk about cars for kids.
Well, I love talking about it because it's for a great cause. It's for the Houston Can Academy. It benefits the Houston Can Academies. But Cars for Kids has been doing this for a long time. You know the jingle, but it's so much more than just that catchy little jingle. How about cars, motorcycle, trucks? Whether they're running or whether they are out of business, what happens is that Cars for Kids will come out there. They'll pick up your vehicle absolutely free. Even if you don't have a title, they're going to do the title work for you, including a search and transfer. Pickup is free, as I mentioned, and there is a tax write-off. So you have a chance to write that vehicle off. And as you always hear them talk about, write off the car, not the kid. Students deserve that second chance at a diploma, and you can give them that opportunity with some help by turning in your car, motorcycle, or truck. Once again, running or not, my friends over at carsforkids.org. Carsforkids.org, 713-225-4226.
ESPN 97.5. I assume you knew.